Okay, good morning, everybody. We got file 241, and today is Thursday, February 19th. And we're going to look at the schedule in just a second. I'm just checking the lights back in the back row because I want to make sure there's lights back there for next time. Because what's next time? Yeah, you got an exam. Oh, and I see all the lights are on. They weren't all on. I think they're all on now. Fantastic. Okay, so since there is an exam next time, let's take a look at the schedule. Yep, so today's the 19th, 24th, which is Tuesday, is your first exam, 1, 2, 3, and 6, chapters 1, 2, 3, and 6. Study guide is the thing that you have to pay attention to. The only thing that's omitted from the study guide that you should probably pencil in there are the online questions, right before the page for the weekly quiz. The simple quiz, multiple choice, whatever is in there, the online questions, those are good to review as well. That will help your mind get tuned into some questions that I might ask. And you might even see some of those questions on the exam. Right, so end of chapter questions, exam figures are important. Become familiar with the structures of all those different chemical compounds. I'm not going to ask you to draw a phospholipid out, but that might not be a bad idea for you all to do. Just draw it out on a blank piece of paper. Make sure you know what it's derived from. What is a phospholipid derived from? What kind of lipid? A triglyceride. Yeah, triglyceride. It's a modified triglyceride, right? It's a diglyceride modified with that phosphate and nitrogen group. Okay, so for the exam, you'll need your picture ID. You'll need a basic scientific non-graphing calculator. Cannot use your phones. Your phone should be turned off the entire time that the test is on, which is what I should do right now. Not just in the mute mode, but make sure you have it turned off so that no kind of signal comes through and maybe disturb somebody around you. All right, so that's a calculator. Pencil, eraser, Scantron 882E. Right, and try not to get the 882E equivalent or substitute. I've seen some of those in my anatomy class. And it's a little bit different color. It has worked pretty well for the anatomy class, but I remember there were times that the Scantron reader doesn't work with those very well. All right, so the ones that you should have look just like this, right? And what color are these? That's probably a good way to tell. Green, yeah, get the green one. The other one is probably like a lime green or a yellow or something. I'm not sure, but it looks a lot different. All different kinds of colors. Yeah, get that one, 882E. Definitely not the LOVAS. That will not work. And I'd hate for you to fill that whole thing out just to have to pre-fill it out again. All right, so pencil, eraser, 882E, basic scientific calculator, and, your picture ID. Thank you. Don't forget your picture ID. If you don't have your picture ID, might as well not even show up to the test. Okay, I'm kind of kidding. Come take the test anyway, but you're causing a problem for yourself and me, right? So make sure you bring your picture ID. Yeah, I'll grade your paper for sure, but I won't release the grade to you until I see your ID. And then I'm always wondering if you're the person that took the test or not. Sometimes it's hard for me to remember. So please bring your picture ID at the same time. Hi.
Hi. You just posted your grades on Blackboard,
right? I do. And I wish everybody to come by my office and take a look at the test and your Scantron after the test. And sometimes I grade it right away. Let's see, yeah, I don't have anything going on Tuesday, so I'm going to grade those tests immediately after you take it. I'll have them graded by like 1 o'clock, something like that. So those of you that have lab that day, you might even be able to see your test before lab. All right, I'll do that lab first, and I'll show the other lab people after that. Okay, and then I'll put them in Blackboard that evening, so you get pretty good feedback with that. I had a question about lectures. I've been putting the lectures online that I'm recording pretty quickly. Usually it's maybe the same day or day after. That's really unusual for me. I usually don't get around to it until Saturday. And this week is kind of like that. I probably won't be able to get lectures online until maybe late tonight. And if not tonight, then late tomorrow. If not tomorrow, then Saturday. Okay, but I'll try to get them on there as soon as possible because I found some people actually like to listen to them again. Okay, so hooray, I'm glad they're there for you to do that. All right, oh, you cannot share a calculator. You cannot share a pencil. You cannot share an eraser. You cannot share a Scantron. Okay, so these are all your individual items on the test. It might seem like a good idea, But please, you all have to have your own material, okay? Okay. Any other questions on the test? Okay, we're not, yes, question. It's going to be everything on the Scantron. So, true, false, matching, multiple choice, multiple choice, things like that. I don't know if there are any multiple choice in on the online questions or not, but sometimes you have to select like A, B, or A, C, D, and it has to be exactly correct, right? If the correct answer is A and B, and you only put B, then it's not a correct answer. There aren't many of those, but I always include some because that's how your board exams will be. So I don't want you to freak out when you get to a board exam. Okay, so you got to take a little, get a little practice in with that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. We're good. All right. So everybody, listen up because I don't want you to disturb people around you. So if you're talking something real important, which I understand, please go ahead, step outside. Okay. All right. So can everybody hear me? Raise your hand if you can't hear me for whatever reason. Too noisy. Microphone isn't on. Whatever. Everybody's good. All right, well, last time we were talking about protein synthesis, and just right off the bat, you should know how many steps are involved in protein synthesis. Yeah, there's two. You see two arrows right here. You got to know what their names are and why it's named that way. The second step is called?
Translation.
I tried to trick you. That's good if you didn't get tricked. Translation. Where does that take place? Cytoplasm. Yeah, cytoplasm. And what kind of information is converted from one form to another? What's the information converted from RNA to protein? You should know that their building blocks are different. Make sure you have that on the tip of your tongue. And what is that first step called?
Transcription.
Transcription, right? And how does that go? From where to where?
DNA.
Yeah, information goes from DNA to RNA, same language, so that's the reason why we call that transcription. And where does that always happen? Always in the nucleus. Nice, because that's where DNA is all the time. That's where it is protected. All right, so that is important information. So we're layering some other information on top of this scheme, right? And we're going to just kind of put it all together right now. So as I flip through these slides, does anybody have any questions over this? Like acetylation, deacetylation, this way of inactivating, deactivating genes.
How do the histone proteins get into the nucleus?
They're transported. Yeah, because they're too big. Active transport. Yeah, they're too big to get through the pores. And protein synthesis, as far as I know, never takes place in the nucleus. Translation never takes place in the nucleus. So they have to be transported in. All right, before every gene, there's a promoter region, and there are factors that have to bind to the promoter region before the gene can be transcribed, and that's called a transcription factor. All right, if a transcription factor binds to that promoter region, then the RNA polymerase can bind, and it can start base pairing. There's my cursor, sorry. I had a hard time finding my cursor. It'll come back. Second. Okay. All right, sign-in sheet is going around. Excuse me, let's get off the schedule. Here we go. All right, so the other things, you know, DNA has how many strands? And RNA has one single-stranded. Yeah, we usually say single-stranded. And so that's one difference between DNA and RNA. What about nucleotide, bases? What are the base pair rules for DNA? GC? NAT, that's really nice. Is that the same or different for RNA? Different, and so for RNA it is?
AU.
AU and GC. Yeah, so a little bit of a difference right there. Okay, usually we have thought previously that for every protein in your body you needed one gene to make a protein. But now we know that many proteins can be made from one gene. How on earth is that possible? Sounds like a lot of gobbledygook. Okay, how is that possible? Yeah, because of splicing, right? Of exons, we call that what? Alternative splicing, right? So remember, there's about 25,000 genes in our genome, but our proteome is over 100,000 different kinds of proteins. We explain that by invoking alternative splicing, all right? And what did I say about this table right here? It should blow your mind. Because it explains the genetic code for all life on the planet, right? So this probably is the most amazing figure or table in your textbook, even though there's some really amazing ones. Okay, so we're going to use this. You won't have to memorize this code. If I do ask you to use a genetic code to build a protein or something from DNA, I'll give this to you. Right. I will also give you the periodic table if you need to know something about those chemicals, like atomic mass, for instance, or the only thing you have to know are the chemical symbols. Like, for instance, I think iron you have to know. What Fe, yeah, so some of these are a little bit strange. All right, so let's talk about this slide right here. Okay, I see a protein. What row is the protein on? What row? I see one row. I see one, two, three rows. Number three, right? Because I see some, sorry about this cursor, I see some amino acids. Amino acids are all joined together, and so that is just a protein. All right, and I also see DNA. What row is DNA on? That first row. And how do you know this is DNA? Well, even though it says right there. But a lot of different reasons, right? It's double-stranded, and you see thymine, right? You see the correct base pair for DNA. Okay, and then I also see a hybrid strand of one DNA strand and one RNA strand. What row is that? That's the middle one right here. Okay, so how do we get from the double helix in DNA to this single strand of RNA, and this particular one is going to be messenger RNA. How do we get from DNA to this RNA over here? Yeah, this thing has to be split open. Okay, RNA polymerase has to bind to that promoter region. Promoter region has to be activated by transcription factor. This is true. Those are all really beautiful details, but I'm just looking for, like, in one word, a really simple transcription. That's right. So that's how we go from DNA to RNA. This process is transcription. And then how do we go from this messenger RNA to this protein? That is translation, right? And you should know where those take place. Okay, so the DNA molecule has to split apart. It has to unwind as well. And then, just like what we said, for the following reasons, RNA polymerase binds to it, and then it starts to make the messenger RNA or ribosomal RNA according to the base pair rules for RNA. All right, so instead of in this position right here where we have an adenine and DNA, right, since this is RNA, we don't have thymine, we have a uracil. So you can tell that this bottom strand right here is an RNA molecule because of all these uracils in there. Okay, the other thing I notice is that these nucleotides are paired in a certain arrangement in this RNA strand. Can you see the arrangement? What kind of pattern do you see? You see like a dot dash? You see dot, 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 dot? Or you see like two and two and two? Or what kind of pattern do you see? If you look at this RNA strand right here. I'll tell you what I see. I see one, two, three. One, two, three. One, two, three. Yeah, I see that pattern, right? One, two, three. We call that the triplet code, right? Because there are 20 different kinds of amino acids. So therefore, one base in an RNA cannot code for one particular amino acid because there's only four bases and there are 20 different kinds of amino acids. And if life uses three bases to code for an amino acid, that's plenty. And that even allows for some duplication in the process as well. And it also allows for a start signal and a stop signal. We haven't run out of triplet codes. All right, so this is what we call the triplet code. And the codon is always found on what kind of molecule? The messenger RNA. Okay? And that messenger RNA is going to base pair with another RNA molecule that's going to bring an amino acid to, what's the workbench for translation once again? Yeah, the ribosome. So there's another kind of RNA that brings amino acids to the ribosome, so those amino acids can be put into this protein as it's growing. All right, so since they're base pairs, if the codon is on the messenger RNA, what do we call that triplet on a transfer RNA? Haven't said it. Yeah, maybe I have it someplace in the pre-lecture reading assignment or in your reading. Right, that is the anticodon, right? Messenger RNA always has a codon. The anticodon is always on the transfer RNA, and it has to follow the proper base pair rules, otherwise the transfer RNA can't bind to the codon on the messenger RNA. Okay, so here's what a transfer RNA looks like. Kind of looks like a clover leaf kind of pattern. There are some segments that are double-stranded, but that's not really characteristic of RNA. That just helps with the tertiary structure a little bit. And here we can see on one end is the anticodon, and to me it looks like UUA, right, for this particular transfer RNA. So this transfer RNA is going to bind to what codon on a messenger RNA? It's going to be AAU, right? That's the base pairing rules for RNA, correct? GCAU. All right, so if that matches up properly, then this transfer RNA can bring whatever amino acid is bound to this amino acid accepting end of the transfer RNA, and it will be put into the protein as it is growing. All right, so there has to be proper base pair rules followed between the messenger RNA and the transfer RNA. So here's a pretty cool picture. I see a nice big ribosome. Here's that tunnel through the ribosome. Ribosomes have a couple subunits that come together. They form around the messenger RNA. And this messenger RNA, you should break down into groups of three nucleotides, right? And this is what we call a codon, right? This is a codon on messenger RNA. When it gets into the proper location of the ribosome, then a transfer RNA can come in and base pair to it, like what we see right here. And that transfer RNA is bringing in an amino acid. And so that amino acid then will be joined to the preceding one. So what kind of bond is going to be formed between amino acid number 4 and number 5 right here? Nice peptide bond, right? That's a really strong covalent bond, right? And when that bond is formed, then the ribosome will move over to the next codon, okay, and another transfer RNA will bring in the next amino acid, and this process will go on and on and on as the ribosome moves down the messenger RNA, revealing all of these different codons. So this sometimes is why we call messenger RNA the message. It's like the dictionary in how to spell out a protein in terms of its particular amino acids, okay? Okay, and so there's a start signal, there's a stop signal. When the ribosome hits the stop signal, then it dissociates, and this protein then is relieved from the ribosome and this transfer RNA and becomes a protein all by itself. What do we call this process right here?
Translation.
Yeah, that's translation. And where does that happen?
Cytoplasm.
Yeah, it's not certainly not in the nucleus. Cytoplasm is a good thing. Now, this protein that is being made right here can have two possible fates. What are the possible fates for this protein?
It
can stay in the cell, or it can be?
Expelled.
Yeah, it can be expelled. It could be secreted, right, depending on what kind of ribosome it is. Right. So tell me something about those different kinds of ribosomes. Cytosolic proteins are made from what kind of ribosome? Yeah, free ribosomes. Right, so proteins that are going to be secreted are made from ribosomes that are found on endoplasmic reticulum, making it rough endoplasmic reticulum. Okay. All right, so that's what this slide here shows. All right, so here's some endoplasmic reticulum. Here are some ribosomes attached to it, right above this pore. Here is a ribosome, and here is this long string of something. What is this long string of something going from one ribosome to another? Yeah, that's the messenger RNA. And what does the messenger RNA have? It has the codons, right? It just has that the triplet code for one amino acid. So transfer RNAs are bringing in amino acids, and then the growing peptide chain gets longer and longer and longer. It's positioned inside the cisternae of the rough endoplasmic reticulum, and so that it is always trapped behind that membrane, whether it is endoplasmic reticulum, Golgi body, or a vesicle. It's always going to be behind the membrane. So the fate of this protein is extracellular or will stay inside of a vesicle someplace. Okay. We talked about the functions of Golgi. I think I want to go back. Actually, we kind of ran over this really fast. So let's maybe just look at this kind of quickly. All right, so here we have a DNA. This is the coding strand. All right, so this is not the nonsense strand. This is the coding strand. And I see a TAC on DNA. And what? How is this going to base pair to make RNA? T is going to be base paired with A. Is that right? Adenine is going to base pair with T? No. Only if it was DNA, right? It's got to be U because it's RNA. All right, and then here's a G, base pairs with C. So what does AUG code for? All right, so where's AUG? So here is the DNA, here's RNA. So that was a codon that we just looked at. What was that, AUG? Ah, here's AUG, and it just so happened that's the first one. That is the start signal. It also codes for methionine. Methionine is kind of an interesting amino acid because it has a sulfhydryl group. And sulfhydryl groups are highly polar, but it can also then form disulfide bridges between distant locations on a protein, and that's a nice covalent bond between different parts of a protein strand, and so that allows for a very strong association. Okay. All right, and, wow, does this match up to my cursor? What is the next, I'm going to go to a different cursor. Hopefully this one will work. I see it. Okay, so what's the next codon? Codon number two is GGC, all right, and GGC, it's not number two right here, so we have to look for it. Do we have GGC anywhere? Here is the universal genetic code. GGC is always going to code for glycine, right, so that transfer RNA is going to bring in a glycine. And if the codon is GGC, what can you tell me about the anticodon on the transfer RNA? It's got to be CCG, right? So that will base pair. And do we have glycine? Yeah, we do right here. All right, so you can go back and forth. I could ask you for alanine. What is the codon for alanine? And what would you need for that? Yeah, you would need the universal genetic code. And what did I ask for? Alanine? Oh, you don't need it because here it is right here, GCA. All right, but you could find what? Glycine? Was that what I was asking for? Glycine? All right, GGC? Okay. So this doesn't have all 20 amino acids, but of course the complete code would have all of these different codons right here. All right, so the important thing to remember, codons are always found on the... What kind of RNA?
mRNA.
Messenger RNA, and anticodons are always found on the transfer RNA. Nice. Okay. Who's got any questions about translation? Kind of where it happens, why it happens the way it does. Okay. I think Golgi we kind of talked about already. It receives vesicles that pinch off from the rough endoplasmic reticulum, and inside those vesicles are proteins. When it fuses with the Golgi body, then those proteins are modified somehow. Right? They can be conjugated with a carbohydrate to make a glycoprotein. Maybe they can even be conjugated with a lipid to make a lipid protein, for instance. Right? But nonetheless, those modified proteins aren't secreted into the cytosol. They're kept in those vesicles. Then the vesicles pinch off from the Golgi and can stay inside the cell, inside those vesicles, or those vesicles can move over to the plasma membrane and secrete it to the extracellular space. That's what we call exocytosis, right? So that's a nice, the Golgi body is part of the secretory pathway. And so if you're going to think of, in a bullet point, what the function of Golgi is, you would say modification and maybe one last thing, packaging. Yeah, because you always want it inside the cell in a vesicle or outside the cell. Yeah, question.
Do the enzymes that come off the soft endoplasmic reticulum, do they go to the Golgi as well? Or?
You know, I don't know of any enzymes coming off a smooth ER.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just know of various kinds of lipids and calcium. But I don't really know of any proteins per se. It's probably an exception to that rule. I just don't know what it is. And I would say maybe there are no exceptions because I've never seen smooth endoplasmic reticulum with a ribosome,
right. Because
then that would mean that it's not smooth endoplasmic reticulum anymore, just by definition. Okay, so kind of a catch-22 there. All right, DNA replication. Let's talk about DNA replication. This is important because at one point in our life, we were just a single cell, right? And we had 46 chromosomes, and that's all we had. Anybody know what that was? What that cell is called? The product of fertilization. When a sperm and egg unite, that forms a single cell with 46 chromosomes. That's called a... This is biology. You don't have to know that for this class, but those of you that know biology should be familiar. It's called a zygote. Yeah, a zygote. And the reason why I mention that is because we were all zygotes at one time. And, of course, that's not a very interesting stage of life because you can't go to lab, you can't go to lecture, you can't go to movies, right? You're just a single cell wandering around. Okay? Well, we need to become billions of cells. And each of those cells should have 46 chromosomes, so there should be a way to replicate DNA so that all of the cells end up with the same number of chromosomes, 46 chromosomes. And so let's look at DNA replication. DNA is what makes chromosomes. That's the nucleic acid that makes chromosomes up. Okay. All right, so when cells divide, the DNA has to replicate itself so that, all right, two of the identical daughter cells get the exact same number of chromosomes. Not same number, but the exact same set of chromosomes as well. All right, so there is a helicase that breaks the hydrogen bonds to produce two free strands of DNA. Right, and just like when making RNA, there has to be a polymerase. Remember, ASE, this means that it's an enzyme, speeds up this reaction, and it makes a polymer. And what kind of polymer does it make? It makes a DNA polymer, right? So it's just going to be a polymer of what kinds of nucleotides again? Deoxyribonucleotides, right? G, C, A, T. And so this binds to each strand and makes a complementary copy of the old strand, right? And it's going to use these base pairing rules that we've been talking about, A, T, G, C. And we call it semi-conservative replication. Right, the original DNA sequence is preserved, and as a matter of fact, both RNA strands are preserved as well. So let's take a look at the next slide. This might be an exam figure. So when I look at the top of this slide over here, what am I looking at, RNA or DNA? DNA, because here is thymine, right, no uracil, double-stranded. Right, and in order to get at the information, which is the sequence of these nucleotides, the double helix has to come apart, right? That's with the helicase. So here I see the helix splitting apart, and then the DNA polymerase binds, and then it starts to add nucleotides, right? According to the base pair rules for DNA, which are what, GCAT. All right, so when I look at this, looks a little confusing to me because I was hoping there would be a couple different colors. All right, so here is the original DNA, and it looks a little bit lighter color to me, right, compared to this strand right here. This is the new strand that's being made. Can you see this is the old strand? And here's the new strand. And then over here, here is the new strand. I'm sorry, here is the old strand, and then here is the new strand. Is there any difference in color between these two for you guys? Oh, there is. That's really handy. Okay, so what color is this right here? Light blue, purple, light purple, and this one here is?
Blue.
Okay, I'm not the only one colorblind, so that's okay. All right, but hopefully they look different to you. All right, so we say semi-conservative, right, because when we look at a replicated strand of DNA, half of it is from the old strand and half is brand new. That's why we say semi-conservative, right? So these new strands of DNA, or these new helices of DNA, half old, half new. Oh, it even says something here, dark purple, light purple.
Yeah.
I can read. Okay. Okay, so that is DNA replication. And DNA replication has to happen before what process takes place in our bodies? What takes place in our bodies that allows us to go from a zygote to something much more interesting? That is mitosis. Yeah, mitosis. Right. So replication has to happen before mitosis can take place. Otherwise, one of the daughter cells won't get all of the DNA or chromosomes that it should get. All right. So that takes us to the cell cycle. Okay. Most cells of the body exist at interphase. This is a non-dividing stage of the life cycle. So if it's an endocrine cell, it is synthesizing hormones and secreting hormones. All right, if it's a neuron, then it's transmitting electrical information. Most of the life of a cell exists in interphase. But it is also the growing phase, right? And interphase as opposed to mitosis. Mitosis is the splitting phase. This is a pretty good diagram that shows the whole life cycle of a cell. Right? And so these phases up over here, these are what we call the mitotic phases. This is when the cell is going to split. And then down over here, we call this the interphase. An interphase even has some phases. We have G1, S, and G2. All of these, pretty much you should maybe consider these as growth phases. For instance, in G1, the centrioles replicate themselves. So instead of having just a pair of centrioles making a centrosome, now you have two pairs of centrioles making two centrosomes, right? So I see two centrosomes here and here. That's one of the things that happens during G1. S phase, in the middle of interphase, this is when DNA is replicated. And as a matter of fact, maybe I should draw a little something on the board. When we look at a chromosome, hopefully that's nice. When we look at a chromosome, let's just draw it like that. That's a single chromosome, right? Just one double strand, right? But we need two of these before mitosis takes place, and we need one exactly like this, right? And what that's going to look like is something like that, right? So we actually have two copies of a single chromosome, but we still call that a chromosome. This is one chromosome, even though there's two identical copies that are joined together right here at the centrum here, all right? So where does... I'm going to go backwards on you. Where in the cell cycle does it go from here to here? Okay, that's S, of interphase, right? So here you have one copy of that chromosome. Here you have two copies of it, even though we call this a chromosome. Sometimes we call these things daughter chromatids. Daughter chromatids. Okay? They're joined together. And then when they split apart as a result of mitosis, we're going to call those daughter chromosomes. They're no longer chromatids. Okay, then we got G2. That's the final growth phase. And then the cell goes through a whole bunch of checks to make sure that it has the proper number of organelles and the right amount of cytoplasm and that the DNA is replicated. So the cell doesn't go into mitosis until it passes all those check stages, and that's what happens during G2. So final growth stage. And that activity that's mentioned right here is just the check to make sure that the cell is ready to undergo mitosis. So let's just draw really quickly, okay, something about mitosis on the board. All right, so mitosis is that dark enough for you guys to see way in the back? Good enough? Okay, so mitosis, you start with one cell and then you end up with, you end up with two cells that look just like that, okay? And then even in particular, all right, in a normal human cell, I just drew the nucleus right here. You don't have to know this for this class, I don't think, but does anybody know how many chromosomes a human has?
44.
Yeah, there's 46, and it's always an even number. Why is it always an even number, no matter what? Because you got a mom and a dad, right? And you get an equal number of chromosomes from each, so it's always got to be an even number. And then it's going to go through mitosis, and then we're going to have some nuclei here. How many chromosomes in this top cell?
46.
Nice. How about how many in the bottom cell?
46.
46. Okay. All right, so that's something that we call mitosis. And so this is the parent cell, right? And then here are the daughter cells. And what's the difference between these two daughter cells? Absolutely nothing. They're identical, right? So these things are identical. What's the difference, okay, between this daughter cell and the parent cell? So I got a couple of questions. What about the color?
The same.
Thank you. What about the number of chromosomes?
The same.
What about the shape?
The same.
Do they both have nuclei?
Yes.
Yes. So what's the difference between the parent cell and the daughter cells?
Nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Okay. So mitosis... Okay, is reproduction. But it is what we call asexual reproduction. It just produces the same cell over and over and over again. All right, so the question then I have for you, this is really what I wanted to get to. What's the purpose of mitosis? I can think of two reasons for mitosis. But you can't tell me reproduction because mitosis is reproduction. Okay? It's just a special kind. So what's the reason for this special kind of reproduction? I hear growth. Is that what you said?
Yes, growth.
All right, so one is growth. Oh, I like that. Right, because that's like going from a zygote to billions of cells, right? That's growth. So you need to grow from a zygote to go see a movie someplace. And then number two, to replace old and damaged cells. And probably in anatomy you learn some things like there are living cells in our bones. What are those cells called? Osteocytes, right? Osteocytes and other bones like osteoblasts and osteoclasts replace all the bones in your body every 5 years. Did you say so? I don't know. I got to find a good reference for that. So those cells are busy. They're undergoing mitosis. They're rebuilding your bones all the time. There's one kind of cell in your body that only lives for about 120 days, but it's really important, and that is a red blood cell. Anybody know how many red blood cells die in your body every second?
Millions,
yeah. About two. 2 to 3 million die every second. So you would run out of red blood cells pretty quickly, and what condition is that called when you run out of red blood cells?
Anemia.
That's anemia. So what has to happen so you don't become anemic? How many red blood cells do you have to build every second? Yeah, to maintain homeostasis, you have to build exactly the same number that die, which is between 1 and 2 million. So even though you're not studying for physiology class, I know you guys are really busy all the time just making red blood cells. So growth is one, and the other is what? To replace old or damaged cells. Okay, so why is this form of reproduction important for growth and replacement of old and damaged cells, right? Okay. Okay, that's pretty good. So let's look at, I'll try to go through this quick because I think this might be pretty boring for you guys because you remember all this stuff already from anatomy. Okay, so you got to know the four phases of mitosis, the names of them, and then of course you have to know the proper sequence of when that happens. Sometimes, and here are the phases of mitosis. We got prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase, just in that order. And in order to remember this particular order, sometimes you might take the first letter of a word like interphase, and which is I, take the first letter from prophase, which is P, join them up with the rest of these phases right here, and that spells something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it helps. It helps me, right? And that is what? IPMAT, right? IPMAT. IPMAT tells you the correct order of these phases of the cell cycle. All right, so let's take a look at what are some of the bullet points of things that are happening during these phases of mitosis, right? So mitosis starts with prophase, ends in telophase. And I sort of don't like this diagram. I'll come back to this in just a little bit. Ends in telophase. Let's just say it ends in telophase. Okay. Well, here is that chromosome. Right, and has this chromosome been replicated?
Yes,
right? And they're joined together right here at the centromere. So here is a chromatid. These are daughter chromatids. And here is that long strand of DNA, right? So here is extended chromatin to be protected, wrapped up on this chromosome. It's got to be wound around histones. And I think we talked about this, but I can't remember for sure. Right, so this is what we call condensed chromatin. Here is extended chromatin. Extended can be used for transcription. Condensed chromatin cannot be used. But if it's in this nice chromosome like this, in a condensed form, it's protected. Doesn't necessarily have to be behind the nuclear envelope. Right, it's difficult to damage. If it's extended chromatin, it's what? It's easily damaged. And then if it is, the cell is going to die. All right, so we got centromere right here. The four phases, prophase, metaphase, anaphase, and telophase. Here are some bullet points that I want you to know for these different phases. Let's just take a look. Here's a nice micrograph. Illustrations are on the left. And so The centrosomes have been replicated. I see two centrosomes right here. So this cell, in terms of centrosomes, is really ready to undergo mitosis. Right? And here is the nucleus right here. And I don't really see any chromosomes. I see maybe a little bit of gray areas and darker areas in here, but I still don't see any chromosomes. If I don't see chromosomes inside of a cell, I know that mitosis is not taking place. I look at this and I see all the chromatin is in an extended form, way too thin to see with a microscope, and it takes up the whole nucleus, and I can even see the nuclear envelope. All right, the first phase of mitosis, notice that the nuclear envelope disappears. I don't see it anymore. And in that area where the nucleus was, do you see any structures, or is it all just a homogeneous color? I see some structures, and those structures you know to be chromosomes, right? And do you see any order, any particular arrangement of these chromosomes? No, they're just all over the place. Anywhere where the nucleus was, you see chromosomes. There's no particular order. Okay, and I don't see the centrosomes. Oh, maybe here, in here, I see the centrosomes. Okay, they're beginning to move to opposite poles of the cell. These are going to organize microtubules from one pole of the cell to the other. And what's the function of a microtubule, once again? Just in one word. How about motility? Yeah, motility, right? Because organelles or objects inside of the cell can hop a ride on a microtubule and move to different parts of the cell. And when the centrosomes arrange these microtubules, we call that a spindle apparatus. Spindle apparatus has not been completely formed just yet. So this is prophase. Nuclear envelope disappears. Extended chromatin condenses into condensed chromatin or chromosomes. Okay, that's prophase. Metaphase, really easy to see. Nice mature spindle apparatus. And I can see chromosomes for sure right here. And where are all these chromosomes? Just randomly wherever the nucleus was? No. They're positioned right on the equator of the cell. So this is really easy to see underneath the microscope. The next phase can be a little bit confusing sometimes. Next phase is anaphase. And in anaphase, I erased it. In anaphase, okay, what is happening? This thing is separating. Right, because here I have two chromosomes, right, and these chromatids are going to be separated into two daughter chromosomes, and that's what I see happening right here. They split at the centromere. They're still attached to the microtubules of the spindle apparatus, and now they're being pulled apart. Right, and so I see a dark signal, which is a row of chromosomes, and then they see a dropout of signal right smack in the middle, and then another dark line right here. So I see dark line, light line, dark line. And does that look different than prophase?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, sometimes it's hard to tell. But if you pay attention to that, I think that you'll be able to see it every time. Sometimes there's a lot of confusion between prophase and anaphase. But anaphase has a lot more structure in terms of these daughter chromosomes. They're separating. Okay, nice centrosome complex. Last phase is telophase. And guess what telo means? It means end or tip of something, right? So here's the end of mitosis. And so I can see that these chromosomes are completely pulled apart. I see some pinching apart of these cells. I even begin to see maybe a new plasma membrane developing between these two cells. And sometimes during telophase, you'll begin to see the nuclear envelope reappear. And even some of these chromosomes are going to disappear because they're going to go from a condensed to extended form so that DNA can be used to make some new proteins. All right. The other thing that's happening right here is a process that we call cytokinesis. Okay. It's not on the slide anywhere. Cytokinesis. Cytokinesis is the separation of cytoplasm, all this cytoplasm right here, into two separate daughter cells. That happens, at least in our illustrations here, it happens after the chromosomes have separated, right? The cytosol and organelles are separating after the chromosomes separate, and so we call that cytokinesis. And for this class, I want you to say that cytokinesis happens within telophase. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but for this class, just say that it does. So So if you look at this previous slide over here, where did they draw in cytokinesis? After telophase. All right. But what I want you to understand is cytokinesis really is happening during telophase, right? It's just a subcategory of something that's happening in telophase. The other thing that I want you to know is the distinction between mitosis and cytokinesis. So if you're going to think of mitosis, it's the separation of something, right? And it's the separation of what? Mitosis is the separation of the genetic material into two separate daughter cells, right? Mitosis is the separation of genetic material into two daughter cells, and cytokinesis is the separation of cytoplasm into two separate daughter cells. It's kind of a subtle distinction, but I think that will help you maybe appreciate the difference between mitosis and cytokinesis. And cytokinesis happens within mitosis, and in particular, telophase. Different cells from different species, cytokinesis will happen at different times, maybe even within a human at different times, depending on conditions or the cell line. And I won't make a distinction in this class. Right? It's always going to be telophase. Any question? I think I saw a question, yeah. Oh, the distinction between the two? Okay, distinction between mitosis and cytokinesis. Mitosis is the separation of these guys right here, which is what? The genetic material. Mitosis is the separation of genetic material. Cytokinesis is the separation of cytoplasm into two daughter cells. It's kind of a subtle distinction, right? And that cytokinesis, right, you can tell cytokinesis is taking place because these two, the parent cell starts to bud, right, split apart. A cleavage furrow develops as a ring, an annular ring, all the way around. It's just not, right, just one little indentation right here. But it's a ring that indents and then finally pinches these two cells away from each other, right? And so that is cytokinesis, and that happens during telophase. It's just a subphase of telophase. Okay, how is that? Is that clear enough, I think?
So,
okay, yeah.
So when we talk about mitosis, we just talk about... So when we talk about... Can you show the picture?
The circle?
Yeah, the circle.
Okay. Here's mitosis.
So when we talk about mitosis, we talk about from the growth phase until the telophase.
From prophase to telophase, yeah.
But not the cytokinesis.
Cytokinesis is a part of mitosis, and cytokinesis takes place inside telophase. Okay, now I think what this diagram is trying to show you is that there's a difference between mitosis and cytokinesis. Okay, and I think that's a subtle distinction. Right, so in order for mitosis to take place, in order to make daughter cells, right, of course the cytoplasm has to split. But think primarily that mitosis is the separation of genetic material. Cytokinesis is the separation of everything else living inside that cell. Okay? And that happens during telophase. Okay, so tela, we said, was tip or end of something. Okay, the tip or end of something. And here we have a chromosome. And here is the tip of a chromosome. This is what we call a telomere. Telomere. Okay? And whenever a cell undergoes mitosis, the ends of this DNA molecule cannot be replicated just because of the way the enzymes have to associate with the DNA molecule. So every time a cell undergoes mitosis, the last bunch of nucleotides don't get replicated. So as a cell undergoes mitosis, what happens to the DNA molecule? It gets shorter and shorter and shorter, slowly kind of disappearing, right? And there becomes a point where this chromosome cannot be replicated because the telomeres are too short. Right? Then it's going to start to lose information that are contained in genes. They won't be replicated. And when that happens, right, when a cell loses genes, it dies because it doesn't have that information. So most of the cells in our body are programmed to die at a particular time, and we call that senescence. All right, senescence. Right, senescence is just means that the cell has run through its normal life, right, and it dies, and it has to be replaced with other kinds of living cells. So most cells undergo that. There are some cells that, some cell lines will live forever. They'll just grow and grow and grow and grow. Because what purpose is mitosis once again? Growth. Yeah, these cell lines will grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. They'll never die. And that's kind of a hallmark of a cancer cell. Cancer cells don't die. They just keep growing and growing and growing and growing because, right, they have a special kind of enzyme that rebuilds the telomere. So the chromosomes never get shorter and shorter and shorter. All right, so the telomeres don't get lost if it is a cancer cell. So that telomere is like a molecular clock that tells when the cell should die. If they don't go away, then the cell line will just live forever. So that is actually a very nice line of research, right, to inhibit that enzyme that rebuilds the telomere in cancer cells. If that enzyme can be inhibited, right, then the telomere disappears, and then what happens to that cancer cell eventually? It dies, right? So it's really nice to know about all these different molecular things that are happening inside the cell. Okay, so germinal cells and cancer cells can divide indefinitely. Okay, so that's it for this meiosis. Okay, I'm not going to talk too much about the internal workings of meiosis, except for what I'm going to draw on the board. Yeah, I don't even think you have any slides. I think maybe I took these out of your packet. Does anybody have slides on meiosis? No. Okay. Well, I think it's important to know a little bit about what's going on. Okay, so here we have mitosis. What the heck is meiosis? Yeah, it's cell division. Definitely cell division. So let's start with this. Okay, so here's a parent cell. How many chromosomes does a parent cell have? Yeah, 46. Okay, and with mitosis, you get the same cell over and over and over again. But for meiosis, oh, how do you spell meiosis? Is that close? Okay, so you start with the parent cell, and then you end up with how many cells?
Four.
You actually end up with four. Yeah, you end up with four cells. Okay, so it's a little bit different, a little different kind of scheme. And these cells are going to be different than the parent cell because each of these cells right here are going to have 23. Okay, so if you were to add up all these over here, right, you get 92. You add up all these over here, right, you get 92. Same number of chromosomes, just in a little bit different kind of package. And all of these cells right here are different from each other. And, all right, so we got two sexes. What sex did these come from? Male, because that's a sperm. Okay, so I see a nice flagellum on there. Sperm has 23 chromosomes, so hence we call these sex cells because they have fewer number of chromosomes. Generally, we call all of these things gametes. All right, so what process produces gametes? Meiosis, right? And all gametes are different from each other. And a male gamete is a sperm. A female gamete is an? Yeah, oocyte. And you could call that an egg cell, right, if you wanted to. And an oocyte has how many chromosomes? I don't know. I didn't teach you this. I don't know if it's in your book, but it's got 23 chromosomes, right? And so that's a female gamete. If a male and female gamete meet each other, what happens? All right, yeah, I was going to ask you the name of this process, and a lot of people just kind of draw a blank, but y'all knew this years ago. That's called fertilization. Yeah, that's fertilization, right? So here's fertilization. That's fertilization. And then you end up with a cell like this with how many chromosomes? Yeah, 46. And what do we call that cell once again? That is a zygote. Right. Okay, so at one point in time, each of us had a dad and a mom. Even if you don't have a dad and a mom right now, somewhere along the line you had a mom and a dad. Even if you were born in a test tube, okay, you had a mom and a dad someplace, and a zygote. So then you're a zygote. So how do you get from a zygote to where you are now? Mitosis. All right, so this right here is what we call the human life cycle. Okay, the human life cycle. Meiosis, mitosis, fertilization. That goes like that. Okay, so I do want you to know that these things are gametes, and we're going to look and see where are male gametes produced. What organ?
Testes.
And female gametes are produced in ovaries, and we're going to look at the endocrine control of that. That includes the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland. Okay, and how it affects other organs, for instance, like uterus and other secondary sex organs in our body. That's the last chapter in the course. That's why everybody stays to the very end, just to learn something about sex. Okay, so I think... Okay, so I got to talk about... I'm going to ask, see if anybody has any questions, and then I want to draw something on the board, one last thing. Yes.
Is that going to be on the test?
Okay, if you're interested to know what's on the test, I always say study guide. If it's in the study guide, yes. Because I can't always remember exactly every little bitty detail. If it's in the study guide, yeah. If it's not in the study guide, then it should not be on the exam. Okay. There might be a couple questions. Yeah.
So the mitosis is for any cell in the body, but not for this one.
Yeah, mitosis can't make sex cells. Only meiosis makes sex cells.
Can I take a picture?
Yeah. I don't have that online. Okay. Okay, well, now you all know where you can buy the picture. It will be on eBay in just a second. Or post it in Facebook before you leave. Okay.
No, get. I will raise the ball for you.
Block dagger, but I need to write some more stuff down. Okay. 15 seconds. Sorry to put pressure on you. Okay, before you go, I want to do some physical chemistry. All right, let's see if I can figure this out. Some people have questions on this process quite a bit. So let's do a thought experiment in our heads. Okay? Okay, so let's see. Let's start with a beaker right here. And we're going to put a cell like this. And we're going to put some particles inside this cell. Okay, and I'm going to say P. Here's a particle. Okay, and I got no particles out here in this fluid. And furthermore, this particle cannot get across the membrane. Can't get across the membrane. Okay. No, let's say it can. I changed my mind. Let's say it can. All right, but we'll just put it inside the cell at the beginning. Okay, and then over here, we're going to put something else. All right, and let's just say C. And C can go across the membrane too. All right, so at the beginning, we have, let me just put like 3 P's here and 3 C's here. At the beginning, we'll start with this. P and C can go across the membrane, okay? And then we come back in a day or two. What are we going to find? Equilibrium. I like that, equilibrium. And what is that going to look like? You're going to have the same concentration of P and C across the membrane. And let's just say, what is that? I don't know. We'll put 2 P's here, 2 P's here. What about C's? 2 C's here, 2 C's here. Okay? The same across the membrane. Okay? And so what is that process called? Diffusion, right? So in terms of C, which way was diffusion working? Which way was it directed? Inwardly or outwardly? For C, right, it was directed inwardly. All right? Okay. Now, let's do this. Let's understand that some of these particles right here have electrical charge on them. Okay? Okay. Oh, I kind of did this wrong because I didn't want P to move. All right, so let's make P not move. Let's put 3 P's here. Okay, so here's a little bit different experiment. Now, P is trapped inside the cell. That's an important consideration because we say a particle that's trapped inside the cell is what? It's osmotically active, right? It's osmotically active. All right, so now we've got equal concentrations of C across the membrane. That's at equilibrium, right? Is anything going to change right here? It's set. Nothing can change, right? Equilibrium means everything's the same. But now let's throw another little detail. Let's just say the C has a positive charge on it and all the P's have a negative charge. Is that too messy of a diagram? Okay, so now we have electrical charge. It was at equilibrium when there was no charge, but what about now that there is electrical charge? Is it at equilibrium? Okay, can you all see no? Because why? What can you tell me about opposite charges? They attract each other. Exactly right. So what's going to happen to C? Even though the concentration is the same, it's going to be attracted inside the cell. Right? So, now we're going to have, let me draw this last condition over here. All right, so here we have the cell. We got three P's inside the cell. All right, and let's just say we have four C's inside. That represents just the concentration. And now, right, we only have one C on the outside. Okay, so now this is equilibrium. So which way is the concentration force directing C to go? Is concentration going to try to move C in one way or the other? Because for diffusion, how do things go? From high concentration to low concentration. Where is C at a high concentration? Inside the cell. All right, so C is going to want to move out like that. It's outwardly directed. Right, the concentration gradient is trying to move C outside the cell, but we said this is at equilibrium. Right, if C is wanting to leave, what is drawing it in? The electrical gradient, right? So the chemical gradient is out, so let me draw chemical. Right, and what about electrical? Inward, right, so electrical. All right, so can you see that there's two forces working right here? They're working in opposite directions. Start with one at equilibrium, go over to here. Electrical is drawing in, chemical is drawing out. Okay, and now there's something else that you notice. Not only is there a difference in concentration between C, there's also what? There's an electrical difference. All right, so knowing the concentration difference, how can you calculate what the electrical difference is going to be at equilibrium? You got to know that for the test. That's called the Nernst equation. Okay? And once you see that equation, it's pretty easy to work. I didn't describe it during lecture like this, but hopefully maybe you can see how easy it is to see if you look at it like this. Okay? With Nernst equation, if you're given the concentration difference, you can calculate the electrical difference. But it's just an equation. For instance, if someone gives you the electrical difference, you can calculate the chemical difference. But you have to realize it's at equilibrium, and Nernst equation only works for one ion at a time. And we got more than one ion in our body, and that's why when we measure the electrical difference between the across the plasma membrane in a living cell, it doesn't calculate exactly like the Nernst equation would tell you. You just can't add the Nernst equation numbers together for all the different ions. All right. Does anybody want me to go over that again? It's actually kind of nice if you think of it this way. Okay. Let's erase this. Like so. So, in the beginning, let's forget about electrical charge. Okay, here we got some of these particles. What's the charge on this particle right here? Nothing. It's nothing. Okay, what about this chemical out over here? Nothing. All right, and this particle here can't leave, right? It is osmotically active, right? And C can. And which way is C going to move? By what kind of force? Chemical, right? It's just diffusion, high concentration to low. All right, so C is going to go inside this particular cell. Oh, we got a cell right here. Okay, so here we got a cell. We still got these three P's right here. Okay, so that at equilibrium, then we're going to have a new distribution, right? We're going to have the same concentration of C inside the cell and outside the cell at equilibrium, right? Nothing's going to change. P can't move. P wants to move, but it can't because it's trapped inside. So what kind of membrane is this? Semi-permeable membrane, right? All right, but we're not so interested just in that because we know a lot of particles inside our cells have electrical charge on them. So let's put some electrical charge. We know that proteins inside the cell have a negative charge. So should I draw it out? Yeah, why not? Okay, so here we're going to draw the same circumstance right here, but we're going to realize we have these negative charges, right? And it just so happens we're going to pick these ions right here to have a positive charge, like so. All right, so if we add up all the charges inside the cell, what do we have? We got some leftover negative charge, right? We got positive charges outside, so these extra negative charges are going to attract these positive charges inside the cell. All right, but that kind of goes against diffusion, right? Because right now you have equal concentration of C. So diffusion isn't going to bring it inside the cell, but the electrical charges will. All right, so then if we go and look at this at another later time, here's the last circumstance. All right, so we got our beaker once again, like this. We still have our three negatives in here. And now let's just say some of the C was drawn inside. So we're left with one here. And then what do we got in here? Let's just say three. Okay, that's almost bad. Okay, because it looks like these things are canceling each other out. I didn't want that to happen. All right, so let's maybe just put four P's right here. Okay. Because now they don't cancel out exactly. All right, so what can you tell me about the inside of the cell compared to the outside? It's more negative. Okay. And C can move across the membrane. P can't. Right, because otherwise P would go to the outside because it's positive. Right, and which way in terms of the concentration does C want to go? C will always want to go from high concentration to low. Where is C at a high concentration? Inside. So the chemical is going to force C out. Right, that's the chemical gradient. Right, but this is at equilibrium. So what exactly matches the force of this arrow that is forcing C out? All right, the electrical gradient is what? Inwardly directed. All right, so this is electrical. And the chemical is what? Not inwardly directed, outwardly. Your book talks about it, that directed. Okay. And at equilibrium, what can you tell me about inwardly directed and outwardly directed? At equilibrium, they're equal to each other and they cancel out. So C won't change. Right? So at equilibrium, there's going to be more negative charge inside the cell, but there's also going to be a concentration gradient established as well. And if I give you the concentration gradient in and outside the cell, what can you calculate? The electrical charge across the membrane at equilibrium? Or if I give you the electrical, and I'm not going to do this on the test, but I could give you the electrical difference across the membrane at equilibrium, and using Nernst's equation, you could calculate the chemical concentration difference across the membrane. All right, so now for pH and that Nernst equation, do you see that the pH equation and Nernst equation are kind of similar? What do they both have in them? Log to the base 10. Right, for that pH equation, you do have to go forwards and backwards. Right, if I give you the concentration of the hydrogen ion, you should tell me the pH. Or if I tell you the pH, you should tell me what the hydrogen ion concentration is. But for the Nernst equation, it's only going to go in one direction. But if you can do it for pH, you can do it for the Nernst equation too. You just have to use, what, the 10 to the X button instead of the log button to go the other way. Okay? So that's how that membrane potential develops. You got those two forces at equilibrium. They're opposite but equal to each other. They cancel each other out. If they didn't cancel each other out, then it wouldn't be equilibrium. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, sign-in sheet is going around someplace. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. So picture ID, non-graphene, basic scientific calculator, pencil eraser, Scantron. And that Scantron has got to be clean and flat. Stray marks on the Scantron will be marked as a wrong answer. So make sure your Scantron is unmutilated when you come in. How do you know what's on the test?
Study guide.
Study guide.